Hello, I'm Brad Graber, an out LGBT entrepreneur author.
Hello, out bosses. Rhodes Perry here, and welcome to this week's episode of The Out Entrepreneur, a weekly podcast where I get to interview today's most inspiring LGBTQ bosses crushing it in business. And on this week's episode, we are welcoming Brad, who is calling all the way from Arizona. So Brad, are you ready to inspire fellow out bosses?
I am ready.
Excellent. All right. Well, just a little bit about Brad before we get going. He is the author of an award-winning novel, The Intersect, set in Phoenix in 2010, which follows the lives of strangers as they make powerful lifelong connections. His second novel, After the Fall, was released in May of 2018 and is the story of a teenager being raised by her grandmother who goes on a journey to find her family. Prior to working as a full-time author, Brad spent 30 years as a very, very successful healthcare executive, and he currently lives in Phoenix with his husband, Jeff, and their 15-year-old miniature poodle, Charlie. Very cool. So Brad, thank you so much for making time to be on the show. I know you're probably busy writing your next great novel. You know, why don't you kick us off and tell us a little bit more about book writing and how that is a business and what's unique about that?
Well, that's certainly a business today for really everyone in the industry, because once you write a book, it would seem like that would be the majority of the work. But in reality, a lot of it is getting your word out and standing in front of your audience. And so in order to differentiate this, but there are about 4,500 books published every week. So in order to get in front of your audience and target, you really have to know your business. You have to know how you're going to promote, how you're going to reach, how you're going to package, all of the branding, how you're going to create your platform. And that is really quite a business perspective and really meshes pretty well with my business background in healthcare. So that's a little bit about that.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to dig into that more. I wanted to first kind of like ground us in understanding, you know, you spent 30 years as a healthcare executive. You know, take us back to the moment where you're kind of wrapping up that aspect of your career and you're thinking about the next step. You have the idea to first move forward with writing The Intersect, right? You have two books out right now and mm-hmm. also After the Fall. So when did the idea of The Intersect come to mind? Was it, and both of these books are fiction too. So it's not like you're writing about, you know, the 101 of being a healthcare executive. Like you went kind of from that career, then going into fiction writing, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. you have a book and that has become a business in some respects. So what was the origin story of writing the book, writing fiction, and when did you realize, wow, there's a whole lot more than just writing the thing? there's a whole mm-hmm. other side of this. So just take us through that.
Sure. Well, back in 2011, I moved from the Bay Area. And I took a job down in the Phoenix, Arizona market in healthcare. And I had previously always worked in nonprofit healthcare and really kind of enjoyed that whole nonprofit background. But the last job was a for-profit setting. So for a year and a half, I was working in a for-profit industry. And for those of you who may not know, healthcare is very different when it's done in a nonprofit setting versus a for-profit setting. In nonprofit, it's very patient care centered, very focused on the services you're delivering. On the for-profit side, it's very bottom line focused. So I found myself, much to my dissatisfaction, spending every day now looking at numbers, looking at financial reports, not because I wanted to, but because I was required to. And so I did that for a year and a half and realized it was not a fit. It wasn't a fit for my career. It did not feel comfortable for me, and I was not happy. Simultaneously, I have a lot of friends who live in the Bay Area, and I was trying to get them to come down and visit Phoenix. And if you think back to Phoenix and Arizona, and we all know what's going on in the country today, but back in 2010, we had SB 1070, which was the stop and frisk law for undocumented immigrants. If you looked undocumented, the police could stop and frisk you. And then we had a lot of other things going on in this marketplace, so it was really challenging. And being a gay person living in this kind of environment, I really was struggling with what I was watching and hearing, because the politics of the state seemed to be distinctly different from the people who I was meeting and getting to know. So I moved into a neighborhood that was really, I lived on the grounds of the Arizona Biltmore in Phoenix, Arizona. And I was really concerned that people would be prejudiced towards gays and lesbians. And what I found were an amazingly welcoming community. So suddenly, with the decision to leave my job, because I really was not happy, and then I've always wanted to write as a career, and then I'm living in Phoenix, and I can't get my friends to come visit because they're all freaking out about the politics down here. And then I'm meeting people who seem really gay-friendly. And I'm really surprised, the longer I was here, the size of the gay community, that it occurred to me that I really needed, if I was going to write and wanted to write a book, I wanted to talk about Phoenix in 2010. I wanted to talk about how strangers reach out and make connections, as you know. But really, I wanted to talk about the individual stories of lives that are connecting and of people from a different background. So that really was the genesis of the thought process for me.
Thank you for that. And the novel itself definitely has won a lot of awards. Can you share a little bit more about the recognition that that got and how that the awards themselves helped get the book out to more people that could benefit from reading the story?
Sure. Well, the book has won quite a few awards, and I'm really lucky at that point. But it adds a credibility to the novel. So even when people go on Amazon and they see, oh, it's an award-winning novel, it really encourages people to buy it. And certainly I'm out there all the time working, getting the book out into the public. And this year alone, so for instance, one of the things I did was I've tried to build my business through developing book clubs. Now, a lot of people will say, how did you find book clubs? Well, I went online to find the book clubs, and I went into the major markets where I've lived, because I've lived in a lot of different cities across the country, and found who was running, who was the organizer of the book club. So like, for instance, I used to live in Chicago, I've lived in Detroit, I've lived in San Francisco, I've lived in New York City, all these different places. And so I put together a list of over 200 book clubs. And then I started every quarter, every 4 months, to write a note to each of the book club organizers. And I reached out pretty regularly. Now, I know they didn't know who I was, and they probably thought, who is this author reaching out to me? But it really was kind of an exciting experience, because the first note they didn't really respond to. 4 months later, I would send another note, and then another 4 months. And then eventually, by the second year, I had landed 7 book clubs. So the awards were like critical for people to realize and say, oh, I see this may be a book worthy of my interest. That's number one. But number two, the persistence of sort of going out there and reaching out to people and communicating with them and telling them a little bit about what the story was about, why it was important to me, and really why it's a passion to be a writer and why it's a passion to tell the stories I tell.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit, because I think you just shared a lot of value. And there's a lot of business owners, LGBT business owners out there thinking about writing a book that's related to their business, right? So nonfiction, mm-hmm. most likely. Mm-hmm. On the first piece, I mean, it was brilliant of you just to reach out to book clubs, you know, to think, where are my ideal readers? Probably people who enjoy reading fiction are part of book clubs. Here's a list of 200, and you just went down that list and you had a process and you stuck to it. So I give you a lot of credit, because that's a lot of work in and of itself. 200 emails alone is a lot. So what advice would you give those folks writing nonfiction? Would that be a similar approach? Were some of the book clubs open to nonfiction, or were these exclusively, you know, a part of your selection process? Was that just, these are fiction book clubs and I'm going to reach out to them?
Yeah, I think fiction is a little more challenging than nonfiction. So, and I should say, when we say nonfiction, self-help, or even, you know, a business owner will tend to write a self-help book, how you can make some improvement in your life, how you can improve your organization. Much like the book that you just recently put out, Rhodes, there's a market for that. And that is more easily found on Amazon than a fiction book would be found on Amazon. So I went directly to the target audience. But I think if I was writing a book for business, and remember, I'm a healthcare executive by training and background, and if I was doing a book like that, I would definitely be on Amazon, and I'd be looking at keywords to promote that book with, because most readers who are actually in the business of buying books are going through Amazon. That'll be their primary source. So that really is kind of an important basis for finding your customers. And the concept of using keywords are really important. So keywords are the words that people type in to the search bar in Amazon, and that would help them find your book. So for instance, if you're writing about culture, corporate culture, if you're writing about really building a brand, you really want those words, those key words, put into your author page. And, you know, when you go into Amazon and you create your book, you'll be able to have an author page where you can put all your keywords in so people can begin to find you and find your book.
So it's clear that you are, when you had pitched the show, you one of the things you were talking about is how an indie author can make their way in an Amazon world. So you have figured that out, and I think thank you for sharing just some strategies for folks that are more in that kind of nonfiction realm of trying to solve a problem and sharing their knowledge through book writing. I think that is really brilliant. You do have a business, you know, you've written a book that is a fiction book, and you are visiting at least 7 book clubs that you talked about, probably all over the country, maybe all over the world. So how do you monetize something like that? That is, you've completely created this whole other alternative, not necessarily universe because Phoenix, Arizona exists, but, you know, people that are not at least real on this plane that we're in right here. So, I mean, how do you've taken this idea that didn't exist before. People have read it. They're loving this narrative that you're sharing, and you're traveling to talk with them about it. So how do you monetize it? When you do visit book clubs, do you read just an excerpt of the book, or do you have a little talk about the importance, at least with the Intersect, of how relationships are so valuable and can be very, very, very powerful with very unlikely people coming together to try to overcome a problem or a challenge?
Mm-hmm. Well, the monetizing is always a bit of a challenge in this portion of the career, because this is the very beginning of the career. So I've got 2 books, I'm working on my 3rd, and really what I've seen, for instance, the sale of my books are much better today than they were 2 years ago, obviously. And that's one of the things that they will tell a fiction writer. If you want to build a business, you must keep writing your books so that, you know, the first book is read, then they'll look for the second one. And as you build your audience, you build your email list. So the other thing I do, and I don't know if you've seen it, but I also write a weekly blog, and it's not as weekly as I'd like it to always be,
right.
But I usually try to do it at least twice a month. And I like to think of my blog as if Dick Cavett and Norma Bombeck had a baby. And I laugh about that because I realize, a lot of people may not know who they are anymore. But I try very hard to keep my audience engaged. And because my brand is really humor and contemporary fiction and looking at the interesting angles going on in the world, I like to write a blog that's a little bit more lighthearted. So at least when you open my blog, you're going to get a taste for who I am as an individual. And you'll always know that I'm a gay man and that I've got a husband, and that's what my life is about. So my blog is pretty well posted there. But I think that it is a challenge to monetize. I think you have to think to yourself in the beginning, it's like any business. It's a little bit of a loss leader until it kicks in, and you've got to look for opportunities to really build. So right now, some of the things that I'm doing, I'm becoming a speaker. I have been a speaker for years in healthcare, but I've been reaching out and starting to do more speaking engagements, hoping to add volume to the books. I do book parties, which is kind of like, this is weird, but remember the old Tupperware parties?
Oh, yeah.
I go out and I will find my super fans.
Yeah.
And a super fan will host a party for me. Well, they will invite 30 to 40 of their friends. And then we come in and I do a reading. from the book, as well as sell the book at a discounted price. I also will help the host host the party. So it's a lot of being a writer, especially in fiction, isn't a money-making business, if you will. Very few people really make a lot of money doing it. But I think if you're an entrepreneur and you're if you've got a small business, a book will always help you. So if you're an interior decorator, designer, if you've got your own business, if you're a dentist, if you're a doctor, books can always help build your business. A real estate person can use it. So books can be very powerful. And I have a friend, he's actually a therapist. He uses that kind of medium. He writes as well as he puts on seminars. And those books become his, you know, lost leaders, if you will. But it helps build his volume and he makes sure that people are constantly flowing through his group meetings. So he's got a very strong presence. Yeah. So books really are a great way to build your business.
I love the idea that you just shared of the book parties and just that strategy of finding that one super fan. Say you wanted to travel to Milan and someone really loved your book, right? You know, you've got that super fan and you share that idea with them and boom, you know, that's completely entrepreneurial in spirit to make that happen. And, you know, by that one person, you may have 39 other people who now know about you. They know about your book. They learn about your other book, the third book that you're writing, you know, so that definitely can be a domino effect. You had alluded in the beginning of this interview that there's more to the book process than just writing the thing. And I definitely know that. So thanks for the shout out for my own book, because it's like herding a lot of cats just in terms of the process of writing and editing, designing, marketing, all that stuff. So that in and of itself is a business where you are, if you're not doing it all yourself, you're delegating some of those tasks. And so because you are part of the LGBT community, you know, when you're looking for other people to help, you know, whether it's someone editing or someone who is a great graphic designer, you're looking for a good cover, how do you select those kind of third-party suppliers, vendors, contractors, whatever you may call them? What's your criteria? Because you had alluded also that you weren't that jazzed about going into the for-profit healthcare world because of just the culture. So you really have the opportunity to create a culture around your book. And I'm just curious what your process is there.
Yeah. Actually, I have a wonderful, wonderful friend who's been laying out books for years, and he's in the Bay Area. He's a gay man, and he's been doing it as part of his freelancing, which has now become his full-time business. And through him, and it's through the Bay Area, there's a Bay Area independent book publishers group that he has really hooked me up with a lot of talented people. And so they're all GLBTQ. Yeah. Folks. And so I have somebody who designs my covers, and that's something I'm really glad you brought up, because there are a lot of steps to producing a book. And the part that I really want to do is I want to write it. I don't even want to sit for the cover photo, you know, in the back.
Totally.
I don't even want to do that. Right. Yeah. But I want to do the writing. And so I have a wonderful editor who I've been working with, who actually is not GLBTQ, but I think he's very GLBTQ friendly, which is really important, because when you're writing these stories, I mean, some of the material really lends itself to understanding a little bit about our culture, as well as the culture, you know, broadly. So he's been pretty terrific. And then, of course, I have somebody who I work with in terms of, it's kind of like not really coaching, but it's a meetup group, and she is a publishing and book marketing expert. So I love spending time with her. And so these are all the different people that you need to help you do your business.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, you've created this whole world, a fictional world, and you're creating real concrete jobs around getting your idea, your story, your book out into the world. And I think that's such a wonderful thing. Right now, we're going to take a very quick sponsorship break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Brad. Hey, Outbosses. Rhodes Perry here. As you all know, part of my passion for this podcast is to empower you and fellow LGBT entrepreneurs to cultivate a feeling of purpose and belonging in your business, to know that you can show up and be the most authentic version of yourself. Purpose, belonging, and workplace culture are concepts I take seriously in my own consulting business. In fact, I'm on a mission to empower leaders just like you and those on their way to joining us to cultivate cultures of belonging. In my upcoming book, Belonging at Work, I share some of my personal struggles of coming out as a trans guy in the workplace and how I leverage this experience as one of my business superpowers. Now, I'm on a mission to support you in taking simple actions that will make a world of difference for anyone who has ever felt as if they needed to hide important aspects of themselves on the job. When you commit to purchasing a special, limited edition copy of the book, a portion of your purchase will support expanding workplace opportunities for fellow transgender and non-binary people. An added bonus, your story about what it means to belong at work will be featured on the book's website to inspire others. You're ready to belong at work now. To learn more, visit Rhodes on Amazon.com or text 444-999 and type the word belong. Again, that's Rhodes on Amazon.com or text 444-999 and type belong. All right, Brad, we are going back into the interview now. And I want to talk with you more about you being a gay man. You're a writer. And you just, before we went to the sponsorship break, you were talking about just some of the content in your stories that are so central to our culture, our rainbow family. And that can be vulnerable, right? I mean, the whole process of writing is super vulnerable anyway. I'm curious, you know, as you were trying to find people, maybe through editors or in the process of getting published, did you ever run into any encounters with people that were less than enthusiastic about the story that you were writing, the fact that you were writing about LGBT characters? Did you ever encounter any kind of tension or friction? And if so, how did you work around that?
Yeah, I really haven't run into that in terms of, no, but I will tell you in terms of reviews, I've seen one or two reviews that have been troubling to me. And, you know, most books for fiction can go on Amazon or they wind up on Goodreads. And I use both of those sites. But I've been kind of surprised, and not about the LGBT, but a little bit about the political nature of how people react often. And so, you know, they tell writers to stay away from politics. And I've really tried pretty much to do that. But when you're writing with about characters, and characters have a political point of view as much as they have a hair color and an eye color. And so it's sometimes interesting to see a review pop up that might complain that the politics of the book is troubling. And remember, my first book is set in Phoenix in 2010. So there's a clear political point of view, because included in the storyline are undocumented immigrant. There's an undocumented immigrant who gets deported, and some other, there's a homeless gay teen. And of course you have a Republican lady. So there's this mix going on. And so it's always interesting to see that in a review where somebody will just shout that out. And that's kind of troubling to me, but I'm not really seeing it in terms of the people I work with. The people I work with, I think, are excited to see somebody writing contemporary fiction that is really story-driven, character-driven, and you'll notice, you've got two of the books, there isn't anybody undressed on the covers. So there's no allusion to anything really overtly sexual, which is not bad. I'm not going to complain about that, but it would be, you know, there are moments when you say to yourself, I might be able to sell more books if I could actually create a cover with a naked lady or a naked man. So
yeah,
you know,
right?
Yeah,
well, it definitely will capture attention, and for readers, you know, we'll have these in the show notes. But the covers are on The Intersect, which was Brad's first book. It looks like Arizona. I've not spent much time in Arizona, but definitely looks like Arizona. Then at the top is just like the eyes of maybe the main character, or I'm not sure. But the other book just kind of is like a cityscape, and it's red. Mm-hmm. It's just the letters mm-hmm. of the title. So you didn't go for the naked bodies and trying to sell the book. And so I give you credit for that, because it allows your work to stand on its own merit. And the fact that you're getting awards is great. I wanted to go back to the bad review. Can you talk to us first about why reviews are so important as a writer? And then, you know, this review sounded like it may have had a tinge, maybe like more than a tinge of homophobia. So mm-hmm. did you address that?
Well, reviews are critical for any of these books, because even when you advertise, when you market on Amazon or Kindle or anywhere that people are going to see your books, they're going to look quickly to see how many people have reviewed your book and how many stars you got. So The Intersect, I know you've probably looked at the website, but The Intersect is about 63 reviews, which have been pretty much 5-star. Yeah. And After the Fall has about 18, and that just came out in May, also pretty close to 5-star. That's really important. It tells the potential reader that they would be interested in reading the book because other people have read it and rated it well. And so with a negative interview, it's always interesting. And it really is kind of helpful, believe it or not, to have a negative interview when you have these books, because then people begin to say, oh, well, you know, that book is a real book. There's good, there's bad. People like it, they don't like it. And there's a little bit of tension around that. And that makes it even more interesting. But going back to the review, for the writer, it's not very interesting. And you know, you often sit there and sort of scratch your head and say, how did I get a negative review like that? Or what did they read that I didn't see? But I think, you know, people come from different points of view. I've certainly read books, as I'm sure you have, where you may not have liked a character, you might have not liked something, so it sort of puts you off. But really, I haven't seen it on the LGBT side. I've seen it on the politics, mm-hmm. specifically when I've talked about Republicans. And one of my characters in After the Fall comes to Arizona and says, looking through the op-ed pages, says, oh my God, how could you live here? And so, you know, people can be offended if they're Republicans or they're part of a red state. And, you know, there are a lot of LGBTQ people. Yes, this is going to shock some people who are actually Republicans also. So that's always interesting. So as a writer, you have to sort of walk the balance there. But I'm not completely opposed to getting a bad review, just as long as it's one or two out of, you know, 20, but yeah. not certainly. I wouldn't want 12 out of 20.
Right. I mean, it's interesting what you're saying, because I think there's a personal element to it. And then there's also the element of any press is good press. Like someone's writing about the book, the title's getting, mm-hmm. you know, picked up by the Google machine. So, you know, that probably lifts your book up for more people to look at. And, you know, say there was a lot of tension around, you know, some people are offended by some of the characters, other people come to your defense. It's kind of this snowball thing where lots of people are talking about you and your work. And so, great. It's hard not to, I mean, with anything where you're hearing a review or someone's, you know, kind of criticizing your work to really I mean, we hear that all the time, like, don't take it personal. But it's like a baby, right? I mean, you've created this. It's come from your mind.
Sure.
Yeah.
But in a way, it makes it more interesting, because for somebody reading those reviews, they think, oh, look at that person's comment. Oh, that's homophobic, or, oh, that's politically ridiculous. I mean, that actually would attract more of your audience.
Yeah.
You know, it makes them more interested in supporting you.
Yes.
So that's just another way of shifting the paradigm on it.
Yeah, I like the positivity. I think that's great. So for other people dealing with kind of like the, I would call them the haters, people criticizing some of the stuff you're putting out in the world, this, like what Brad is saying, you know, there's people that also in those kind of online forums are ready to come to your side, to be your champions, and most likely attracting other people who really want to support your success, which is awesome. And I think that leads in nicely to my favorite question of most of these episodes, which is just, you're a writer, your book is your business. I'm curious, from your own lived experiences as being a part of our Rainbow family and how awesome it is, do you think that because of those experiences, you have a competitive advantage, you know, in being entrepreneurial with your writing, with your book, And if so, what are some of those advantages? I call them, you know, rainbow superpowers. And I'm curious what your take is on that.
Well, I think my rainbow superpower is listening. And I think that, and observing. And I think that we're unique in a rainbow community to be able to listen and observe. Because very often we, certainly as young people, find ourselves on the outside. Mm-hmm. And we're looking and trying to figure out, why are we not fitting in? What is going on around us? What are these people saying? How do those messages mesh and build and make sense, or are they contradictory? So my superpower, and I think we all actually share it, is the ability to put somebody in that position. So I will be able to, through writing, give you the opportunity to step into the shoes of somebody else and see the world through somebody else's eyes. And that is really a powerful thing to do. So again, in my books, you can become an undocumented immigrant and understand how that painful that experience is. Or you can be a homeless gay teen and come to the conclusion of how that could have happened. And really, one of the things that we didn't talk about is a majority of my readers are 35 to 60, and they tend to be female straight women. Mm-hmm. And they read books, and they're very eager to learn about these characters. And that's what I've been surprised at, actually, is my audience and being able to share these stories, how excited they are to actually read these kinds of stories, because they're different. They're about different people, different experiences.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of influence that you have as a writer, right? And the fact that you're sharing the narratives, the stories of people, most likely people in your world, you know, outside of the book writing process, where you're interfacing with LGBT young people who may have had or have current experiences of homelessness, folks in your life who are undocumented, Republicans who live in Arizona, you know, and you're able to share by listening, like what you said, you know, through the superpower, you're able to share those narratives as best as you can as the writer. And that, you know, for your readers, you're helping create a bridge to build empathy, to really understand the motivations and the experiences of your characters. And I think that is super powerful. And the Intersect itself, you know, these kind of powerful relationships that are formed with kind of a motley crew of people, I think we need more of that now. So, I mean, it's actually a really good opportunity, right? That you can get your book out to people who are craving, like, how do we connect? Because we feel so disconnected and disjointed in so many ways.
Well, it's so interesting to me because in The Intersect, there's so many different characters. There's a gal who's in her 70s. She's a septuagenarian, and she's just very independent. And so she breaks her hip and suddenly finds herself in the healthcare environment where she has no control and she has no family. And that's sort of where her story begins. And then you have a gay couple moving from the Bay Area who are having relationship troubles, as many couples do. And they're in their 50s. And I wanted to make sure I wrote about older committed couples and, you know, the challenges that they face in their relationships. And so we have that. And then, you know, we have another couple moving from Michigan or retiring, facing another challenge. So there's a lot of stories that connect people, and they're connected by knowing each other. They're connected by actually meeting one another. So one of the stories is this woman who breaks her hip. Her relatives sell her house underneath her, and the gay couple move in. And then one day after she's released from the facility, when she's healed from breaking her hip, she rings the doorbell and shows up. And they, of course, take her in because they think that she's a distant aunt, and they're confused. And so that's how that story begins. And it's really about people being present for each other. And I think, you know, today, especially with the politics that we have going on in the country, there are times when you really have to sit back and listen carefully. What is going on? And why are people taking their point of view, which is really hard to follow, especially, you know, I'm obviously not a Trump supporter, but it's hard to understand how people are taking those viewpoints. But they all, you know, have valid points of view for them. So
yeah, I think channeling your superpower of listening could be a good place to start for all of us. I want to kind of go back to, you know, some of the challenges, the one negative review that we were talking about, and your superpower of listening. For those folks who are LGBT business owners right now, what's one piece of kind of guidance that you would give them to pursue that idea? When people are thinking about, oh, I have this book in me, I want to write it. What's one piece of advice that you would give to those folks and their genius and trying to share that with the world?
Yeah. Well, we all have an inner voice, and our inner voice is telling us what to do. And I think we need to really listen to that inner voice. And I think the most successful people tend to listen to themselves. And I think it's really important to stop, be quiet, allow that voice to help direct you. I honestly, sometimes I sit back and think, I wrote two books, two contemporary novels? That seems really impossible now that I look back on it. But it was really the act of following your own voice and hearing what you felt you needed to do. What stories do you need to tell? What kind of impact do you want to make? And I think that's great for people to listen to.
Yeah, I agree. And I think trusting your intuition, trusting your inner voice, it's almost like the world is telling you to always kind of seek out guidance elsewhere and kind of not really trusting, you know, what your gut is telling you. And I think the more that we can kind of remind ourselves that I think a lot of the wisdom that we're seeking, we have, and we just have to trust that. I think that's a really, really important reminder. So Brad, I wanted to talk with you a little bit more about your books. And the first place where I want to start is just, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about how vulnerable it is to write anything. And I think especially with fiction, I mean, this is a world that you've created from your own mind. So how do you get past the feelings, I call these feelings like the imposter complex, you know, the feelings of not being the right messenger, the right person, not good enough, da-da-da, whatever it might be. How do you, you know, do they come up, number one? And if they do, you know, how do you work around them?
Oh, sure. They definitely come up. You definitely have that feeling of the imposter syndrome, sure. Absolutely. But I think that, you know, the art of being a writer, and I can speak to being a writer, is that it's the art of putting the ass in the seat. That's really what it's about. Sitting in a room by yourself, mm-hmm. quietly, and writing the book. And I think for most entrepreneurs, it's probably the same decision. You have to, at some point, sit down and actually do the work. So I think that the way to get through the imposter syndrome is to actually do the work, do the research, make your way through it. And that really, I think, is ultimately the greatest help. Put together your to-do list. Put that down and then start working through it and believe, you know, we didn't talk about this, but I have a motto that's actually on my desk. It says, if you believe, you will achieve. That helps get past that powerless feeling of being an imposter.
Yeah. I love that. If you believe, you will achieve. And that's where we have to start. I think for most mm-hmm. of the people who listen to the show, running your business, like, when you had that business idea, and for you, Brad, when you had the idea for your book, sometimes you share it with other people and they're like, what are you talking about? How are you going to make money? Da, da, da. You know, those are probably the people you shouldn't continue talking to. But that's a really hard place to be in when you're first conceptualizing these ideas. And like what you said, you have to believe in yourself. That has to start first. And other people will come along if they're going to come along. And if not, you don't, you know, they're not the people to surround yourself. Yeah.
You know, we have an advantage. I always say we have an advantage as GLBTQ people because we have had a crisis as young people to actually discover who we are. We've had to break ranks, if you will. All of us come from straight parents, straight families. Most of us do, I think. And we've had to break ranks. So this doing your own business is the same kind of process. You're breaking ranks, if you will, and sort of beginning to believe in yourself. And if you have enough guts to believe or to accept that you're trans or gay or lesbian or, you know, queer or questioning or bisexual, then you have enough guts to sit down and certainly either write a book, start a business. You really do.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, this has come up on the show again and again. I think the first time we were talking about this was way back at like episode 13. And we had a guest on the show, Jonathan Lovitz, who was saying, you know, we're the architects of our own lives. You know, there's not really a blueprint. You know, I mean, maybe now more so because we've got the internet, there's more positive groups and, you know, positive media. But I mean, certainly for myself, there wasn't kind of that blueprint. Like you said, we did have to break ranks and we did have to really trust our gut of who we are in the world, even when other people didn't quite understand. And you're right. I think going through that experience should give all of us the confidence that if we have a business idea, we have a book idea, just go and do it. You've already done the hard thing of self-actualizing who you are in the world.
Absolutely. Because that is the hard thing. Mm-hmm. The self-actualization is the hard thing. I mean, that's where the voices are sort of speaking to you, the culture is speaking to you, your parents are speaking to you, you know, your grandparents, and, you know, that's the hardest step, I think.
Yeah. So this is related to more of your book writing process and how you built your audience, right? So as being a member of the Rainbow family and being a writer, you know, what's some of the biggest challenges for you when, you know, you're just trying to get your book out into the world and you want as many people to read it as possible because you want that influence, but were there challenges with trying to appeal to, I don't even know, like some of the people who are in Arizona where they might be a little reluctant to purchase a book from you because you're an out gay guy.
Right. Well, you know, part of that in Arizona was I won an Arizona Authors Award. So that
congratulations.
Really helped.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice. That really helped in Arizona. It doesn't mean that everybody in Arizona is reading the book, but I am committed to going to everybody's home and knocking on their door to talk about it. So I think it's a challenge. It is a challenge. And right now I have come to accept that people will read the book if they get to know me. Mm-hmm. And if they get to know me and they get to like me, they'll read the book because I'm really an unknown quantity at this point. Eventually I will be an Augustine Burroughs, or I might be a Nicholas Sparks, or I might be a Armistead Maupin. But right now, I'm just Brad Graber. And so that's part of the challenge is understanding that, for me at least, that I've got a platform, as Rhodes, you do too. And we really have to continue to grow that platform. And I think I've heard this in one of your discussions that you've had a couple of weeks ago where, you know, somebody starts with only one follower, and that's really kind of the way it is. And that happens for an author as well as an entrepreneur. You start with one customer, and you've just got to keep going and have faith and understand it isn't today, but it's the long. You're in the long road of where you're going. What's your vision? Where are you going to be? And you're going to be somewhere different in 5 years than you are now. And I'm certainly in a lot different place than I was 5 years ago. And so it just keeps getting better. So you just got to keep going with it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So one more question before we jump into our bonus round. So you mentioned that you're now in the process of writing your third book. Can mm-hmm. you give us a sneak peek at all of what the book's about, or just a little
yeah.
teaser?
Sure. It's called Boca by Moonlight. And it's the story of two men in their 60s. One is has been divorced 4 times. The other one is widowed. And they have a friendship that is tied through being former brother-in-laws. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be facing the death of one of their friends. And so we're going to go through their life and their challenges and a lot of the tension that plays out between those two characters.
Awesome. So. Awesome. Okay. So Boca by Moonlight. And mm-hmm. what's your target date to get it out?
I think it'll be out January of 2020.
Nice. Okay. All right. So we'll look out for that. And if there's any information you want us to share in advance, we'll feature that on the show notes if we get your permission. But for sure, definitely The Intersect and After the Fall, we'll have links on our show notes there. Okay. All right, listeners. So welcome back. We are now jumping into our bonus round where we're going to get the opportunity to get to know Brad just a little bit better, gain some insights on how we can be more authentic in our work. And then we're going to learn a couple of ways to stay in touch with Brad and find out where we can purchase his books. Okay. So Brad, you had talked about the mantra that you have, which is if you believe, you will achieve. Are there any other things that you, especially like as you're writing and you're getting started and you're kind of in that solitary mode of writing and doing the thing and doing the work, are there any other kind of mantras or affirmations that you share with yourself just to kind of keep going and to stay focused on the thing that you have to get done?
What I do is I tend to write the characters down on a sheet of paper, and I continue to build who they are and what they look like. And I really got that idea from, I know this is crazy, but like Oprah Winfrey believes that if you want something, cut out the picture and put it in a box.
Yes.
And so I spend a lot of time visualizing and creating. And if I see a picture of somebody who I think is going to be my character, I cut them out.
That's so,
cool. So that's kind of what I do. It's not quite a mantra, but it's a technique.
Yeah, I think that's a great technique. It's like the vision board, right? And I'm a huge Oprah fan,
yeah.
So yeah, that's very cool. So that's the power of visualization, right? So
right.
Yeah, so can you share maybe another personal habit that just helps you kind of master yourself and master the process of writing?
I try to stick to a schedule. And I know everybody who runs a business understands this, but you've got to have a schedule in order to make sure the work is done. So I start at 7:30, don't look at email, don't do any of that, but really start writing. And my writing goes for a couple of hours. And, you know, you can get up and you can walk around and take a break, a glass of water. But I really try to keep it down to a set four-hour schedule. And then if I'm lucky that day, I can go longer. But it's always the writing first and then the business in the afternoon. How am I going to promote the book? Are there Amazon ads? What is going on in terms of sales reports? So I do the business in the afternoon because I find that the creative part of the day for me is usually the start of the day. Now, there are people who are night owls and their creative part might be the evening, but whatever your time frame is, I think you really have to be very hard and fast on your schedule.
Yeah.
And make sure you stick to it.
I completely agree. Whenever you're most creative, just kind of block out that time and do the thing that everyone started a business with like the dream, the goal of like the one thing that you want to do is X and everything else you want to delegate. And so on that point in your book writing process, what is the one thing that you like hands down you delegate? And it was like the very first thing as soon as you had kind of the resources set aside, you're like, this thing, I'm never going to do it again. What is that for you?
Well, I think there are two. Number one, an editor.
Yes.
You have to have a quality editor, absolutely. And number two, you have to have a great copy editor. Now, the difference is an editor will look at content and do some minor corrections for you, but they'll look at content and flow and character and time and all of that. But a copy editor is somebody who will start looking for those darn typos that you can't see and the missed commas and the bad spacing, and it happens. And I think that every author just cringes at those, and trust me, they get through. Mm-hmm. And thank God books are more print on demand today where you can, you know, find them and still make corrections.
Yes.
But they do get through, and that's part of the struggle of being an author. And I think that's what I would always do. That's where my first emphasis is, editor and then copy editor.
Yeah, it's amazing how long you stare at a manuscript and you're like, all right, it's good, it's great. And then you send it out to a copy editor and it comes back totally marked up and you're like, what? You know, so yeah.
Right.
And just the distinction between, you know, the content or the design editor, which is kind of looking at the whole arc of what you're writing versus kind of the folks that have that amazing attention to detail that for many writers, it's like, whatever. You just want to get the thing down on paper. Okay, so two more questions for you, Brad. Can you share one piece of advice to inspire the next generation of outbosses who might be also outwriters? What's that one piece of advice for them just to take that first step?
Well, the world is changing, and you folks are lucky as heck. because the future is really yours. If you are a Netflix or a moviegoer, or if you love Hulu, they're looking for content, 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 and content. And if you're a gay writer, you have a unique voice and unique viewpoint, and folks are looking for it. So I say, start getting to it. Join meetup groups, join writers groups, really start working your craft. And there are a lot of people out there to help you. And there's a lot of opportunity. Yes. And a lot of money to be made, actually.
Yes, I agree. And I just love that. The future is yours, you know? So just get started. Just do the thing. Hit publish. Mm-hmm. Get your voice out there. I mean, especially for our rainbow community, our voices are needed now more than ever. So let's mm-hmm. share kind of the richness and the diversity of our communities. Okay, so Brad, thank you so much for your time and for inspiring fellow Outbosses. Before we go, can you share the best way to get in touch with you and to learn more about your books?
Yeah, well, you can certainly go on my website, which is bradgraber.com, and reach out to me and, you know, send me a note. And if you want to write a book, or if you're concerned about how to write, or you need some encouragement, I'm happy to help anybody do that and even give you some leads. So you can reach me at brad@bradgraber.com. That would be the easiest way to do that. And if you're interested in the books, please go to Amazon. Please.
Yes.
After the fall, it's the Intersect, and that's the quickest and easiest way to do it. Or I'm also on Apple. And
awesome.
Apple Books.
And,
so, yeah.
And soon in 2020, we'll have Boca by Moonlight. So three books. So you've got the trilogy. Yes. Awesome. Well, Brad, thank you again. And for Outbosses, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. As you know, it is always my privilege to connect with you and to so many inspiring Outbosses and writers like Brad. So for details from today's conversation, to learn more about where you can get Brad's books, go ahead and check out our show notes at www.outentrepreneur.com. If that is too much to remember, go ahead and text OUTBOSS, all one word, to 444-999, and we will definitely connect you with the show. As a next step, subscribe to the podcast, consider leaving a rating and review in iTunes, and be sure to share the show with a friend or loved one who it can help. And as for now, keep being your authentic selves 100% of the time.